You are flying high with Locked On Eagles, presented by LockedOnEagles.com. We are your daily source of the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, the incorrigible Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football, and Grandstand Sports Network. Follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. That's K-I-S-T. As always, I am joined by the confirmed best co-host in the game, Mr. Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how's the streak doing? How you doing, brother?
Oh, you know how I get before on preview shows, man. You know how I get on Fridays. I just get jazzed. I'm excited. Even if it's 49ers at home, you know, you can't overlook it. I'm just pumped to go. And it's a guest. It's a guest on a Friday. These are two of my favorite things, man.
We have a special guest with us today. That's right. A personal friend of mine, my boss over at Inside the Pylon. He is the pioneer of the Draft Twitter Book and Gardening Club. He also does work on QBs for Bleacher Report's NFL 1000. And he is the host of Locked On Patriots here on the Locked On Network. He is the incomparable limousine ride and Learjet flying meat planting son of a gun, Mark Schofield. Mark, how you doing, brother?
That was quite the intro. You worked a lot into that, including some meat planted. That was impressive.
Gotta stay
now you understand what I get every single time on the show, man. It's a huge ego boost. I just sit here and Mike lays it on me for like 20 seconds. It's the best.
Oh, it's great. I love it. I'm going to like record that and like play it for my kids when I walk down the stairs each morning so they know who they're dealing with.
Nice.
So, Mark, last time that you were on this show, I was unable to attend the festivities. I believe.
Yeah, you ducked me. You ducked me,
dude. We talk to each other all the time on Battlefield 1 every Friday night.
No, so. I know, but you ducked me. I mean, I know your wife was having a child at the time. I think, but
come on, man.
Yeah. Come on.
It's an issue when I have
show
to,
some respect. Show some respect.
I'll put some respect on your
put
name.
Some respect on it.
I believe that was the September 12th. Never forget to remember that September 12th is the day before September 11th. It was that show. So go back and listen to that if you want. So you said that I had the handwriting of a sociopath, but you also shared with Ben and our gentle listeners your affection for Carson Wentz. And man, have you been proven right to do so this year? Tell our gentle listeners when he caught your eye initially and what attracted him to you.
December 2014, Inside the Pylon was an unheard of small fledgling little website that nobody even had heard of. Nobody knew who we were. And you get into that sort of December lull when there's not a lot of FBS stuff going on. NFL is pretty much playoff and season and all that stuff is good to go. So I'm looking for something to write about on a Sunday morning. And I start looking at some FCS playoff stuff. And I come across North Dakota State versus South Dakota State in the quarterfinals of the FCS. And I see that North Dakota State, now they had won like three straight national championship games. And they had a comeback win with this kid named Carson Wentz, driving them down the field in the final minutes and throwing this great sort of corner route against the cover two look. And I'm like, wow, that was a nice little throw. So I write it up. I write up that play. But I keep coming back to Wentz. I keep coming back to him. You know, when that season ends, they win a national championship game, break down his game against Illinois State. And it's one of those games where you see him make a couple mistakes early. But even on their final last-minute drive again to win it, like he's maintaining aggression. He's like still making these risky downfield throws. Has this play where he sort of breaks the pocket, sees man coverage, sees a blitz, takes a deep shot, and it gets him down, you know, into the red zone, and then he runs it in for a touchdown. And I start thinking, man, you know, he's going to be a senior. This is a kid that can play. He's aggressive. He's led two last-minute drives and one playoff run to win a national championship. Expectations were, you know, really high on him because he was replacing a god out there, you know, and the kid that was starting the starting quarterback before him.
Yep.
And so I, you know, writing him up all summer long. And the interesting thing about sort of this like football media industry is when people sort of give you a shot, give you a hand, you know, reach out their hand and give you a hand and pull you up. And one of the first people to do that for me was Matt Walden. And he and I did an RSP film on my first time doing one of these with him the Friday night before they opened their season against Montana. And I still remember when people were starting to talk about Carson Wentz, Daniel Jeremiah was like throwing some Wentz tweets up because that was the only big time game of any kind that Saturday was North Dakota State, Montana. ESPN was there. Brett Musburger did the game. And so people were starting to talk about Carson Wentz. And I remember when Walden dropped the tweet that he and I were going to do a film room, you know, later that night. And people were just like, oh, wow, he's really getting some attention. And so, but yeah, it dates back to December of 2014 when I first noticed this kid, when I first started to write about him, and when I first started thinking, this kid can play the game.
Right. So that's when Carson catches your eye. He goes through the entire process there at North Dakota State. Obviously, we know the impact that he made at the Senior Bowl. Kind of everybody right now is talking about how the way that he led at the Senior Bowl, the way that he hustled to the drills and everything, just kind of illustrated this guy that you wanted to bring into your locker room, you wanted to make him the face of your franchise. He comes to Philadelphia in year one, and obviously year one finishes, there's a ton of just dissension. There's a ton of just friction. You know, people have very, very different opinions on Carson Wentz. Everybody's falling on different sides of this conversation. And now we're here in year two, and it seems that, you know, we're a lot more singular in our opinions of him because it's kind of become undeniable the talent that he has. And so my question for you then is, you know, you watched him year one, you liked him coming out of the FCS school, you liked him coming out of North Dakota State, you see him year one. Coming into year two, what were you saying as far as, all right, if Carson can shore this up, if he can improve in this area, then he'll be a good quarterback in year two? And has that aspect of his game really come to fruition so far in his second year?
Yeah, well, obviously because for whatever strange reason, people think I know what I'm talking about when it comes to quarterbacks. They have me on to talk about quarterbacks. And, you know, I get asked this question a lot, you know, after last season ended this summer, going into this season, you know, look, you liked Wentz. What were your expectations for him coming into year two? And I told everybody, look, I was cautiously optimistic about where Wentz was going to be in year two because, you know, when you watched him last year, one of the things that sort of really stuck out to me sort of down the stretch was the notion of competitive toughness. And we sort of knock that as a concept for people on the outside looking in like, oh, what does that really mean? Well, let me tell you what it means. Watch Deshaun Watson against Alabama in the national championship game, the second go around. Watch him take a shot from Reuben Foster that helicopters him around, spins him around like a top, and then see him pop right back up. What does that do to the guys on his team? What does that do to the guys in his huddle? What does that do to a defense, the guys on the other side of the ball, when you get a chance to put basically a knockout blow on a quarterback and he pops right back up and keeps making play after play after play? It's the same thing with Carson Wentz. It's that same sort of competitive toughness that you see the guy make a mistake and he doesn't quit on himself. He doesn't quit on his teammates and he comes right back and makes throws. You see him take a shot. John Gruden got mocked on the timeline for the phrase North Dakota tough on Monday night, which is kind of, look, we can admit it's kind of a cheesy little phrase there. But the underlying point is true. Like, Wentz is one of those guys, like a Roethlisberger, that can take a shot and it doesn't get to him. It doesn't affect how he plays. The teams stupidly think they can keep blitzing this guy. He's been blitzed more than any other quarterback in the National Football League right now, and he's making them pay for it. At some point, you think defenses might sort of stop blitzing the kid because you can blitz him all you want. He's going to hang in there, take a hit, deliver the throw. I mean, that touchdown to Clement along the right sideline. Like, yeah, exactly. And so that was sort of like the underlying thing with Wentz for me was I'd seen the kid make mistakes, but he never stopped being aggressive. You know, that Illinois State National Championship game, he made some mistakes early. He had a fumble when he was trying to make a play, and he fumbled the ball away. And that's something where you might see a quarterback sort of go into a shell and not be aggressive. But then, you know, in the final drive, he's making these deep downfield throws because that's what you have to do to play the position well. And so I think he had his lumps last year, but he never lost that aggressive nature. He never lost that sort of inner fire competitive toughness. And that's what's sort of sticking out right now.
All right. So, Mark, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to lay it out there for you. For this year, you know, if Carson continues this pace, we've got 530 attempts, which is way down from last year, which is fantastic because we know he got overworked last year. We've got 4,200 yards, 39 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. Are these MVP numbers to you?
Rich Eisen, at some point during that game on Monday night, put out the tweet that was like, if this was Aaron Rodgers, if this was Tom Brady putting up these kind of numbers, we'd be talking about an MVP-type season. And I think that's where we should be right now with Carson Wentz. Obviously, you know, being on pace for something doesn't mean a lot because things can change. We'll see how this offense looks in the next couple of weeks with Jason Peters out. I mean, you guys know as well as anybody, when they lost Lane Johnson, you know, Wentz struggled a little bit. Obviously, I think Wentz is a better quarterback right now. I think this is a better team right now all around him. So I think they'll be able to maintain a high level of play. Will he maintain those same numbers? Maybe. Eagles fans certainly hope so. You guys certainly hope so. But even if he doesn't, look, if this team finishes 13-3, You know, and he goes on and has maybe not the numbers that you just rattled off there, Ben, but numbers approaching that. Mm-hmm. You have to have him in the MVP conversation. It would be incredible not to, because to remember, you know, it was a second year quarterback. This was a team that struggled at times last year to make this sort of leap. And to at this point, we're basically at the halfway mark of the season. They have the best record in football.
Yeah.
And look, you know, that's MVP type stuff.
And people get obsessed maybe a little bit too much with MVP and awards and stuff like that. I'm just happy we got a darn good football player. And you talked about it before, and we talk about it all the time on this show. Competitive toughness to stay in the game when the chips are down and get the job done and have the mental ability to push through a rough stretch in a game like we had against the Redskins, a rough game with the penalties against the Panthers. So that's something that he has. Replacing the leadership of Peters, I don't think it's going to be too hard for Wentz either. I think that team is going to rally around him. Okay, so look, let's set the stage for the matchup this Sunday, Wentz against San Francisco. Okay, so I was reading my weekly Evan Silva matchup article on Roto World, trying to get some DFS tips because I'm a degenerate gambler. And here's some highlights of what he had to say about this Philly San Fran tilt. Okay, he says, quote, number one overall fantasy passer, Carson Wentz. Now hold on, let that breathe for a second. Mm-hmm. Now run it back. Number one overall fantasy passer, Arif, Carson Wentz, enters yet another smash spot against the 49ers, who are hemorrhaging a league-high 70.7 snaps per game to enemy offenses, enhancing opponent opportunity for box score production. Four of the last five quarterbacks to face San Francisco have posted top 10 fantasy weeks, including Kirk Cousins' QB1 result in week 6 and last week's QB2 game by Dak Prescott. The 49ers have also allowed the 7th most rushing yards and a league-high 3 rushing touchdowns to quarterbacks. Wentz is the overall QB1 play for week 8, unquote. Now look, add into all this the other factors like PFF ranking Nelson Aguilar as the top matchup advantage against nickel corner Kawan Williams, who was also likely to play, right, with mm-hmm. a quad injury, correct? A matchup-proof Zach Ertz that's going to be likely seeing Sir Jaworski of Tart in coverage, the Game of Thrones reference, a revenge game for Torrey Smith, and the underperforming and much debated on this show and Twitter, Alshon Jeffrey, with a significant advantage, according to PFF anyway. We have been fooled before. And then he's going to be against Dante Johnson. I'll throw this to you, Mark Wentz, your boy, our savior. What do you think about this matchup with the 49ers?
Guys, I do a video every week for Roto Grinders called Inside the Matchup, where I break down 1-2 scheme-based fantasy recommendations. And one of the two names I recommended this week was Carson Wentz, the only quarterback I recommended this week. Now, you rattled off some numbers, Michael. Let me rattle off a couple more. The 49ers have given up an average of 22.6 points per game to quarterbacks on DraftKings. Mm. There's only one team that's given up worse right now, and that's the New England Patriots. So you might consider maybe Phillip Rivers might be a play here this week, but that's a team that's traveling east. Chargers often don't fare well in those quote-unquote biorhythm games. So I think just by those numbers alone, you're looking at Wentz in line for a big game. Here's the other thing. That 49ers defense, they're giving up plays in the secondary down the field. They're giving up plays on just vertical routes. There are blown coverages at all levels of the field. They're trying to get it figured out. That sets up well for a team that has weapons across the board and that has a quarterback that is playing at a high level right now like Carson Wentz is. So, I mean, that's, definitely one thing you've got to consider.
Now, let me throw this at you, Mark. Struggle.
Yeah, go ahead.
There is a chance. I was looking at the weather for Sunday, and it was saying that there was an 88% chance of thunderstorms around noon, 83% chance of storms around 3 p.m. Does that kind of change things? I just learned this today. One of our listeners, Jeff Schramm, at Jeff_Schramm, who throws us great tips all the time, sent me the weather forecast for Sunday for Philadelphia, and it could look bleak. Have you seen? I can't think of a time I saw Wentz throw in the rain, whether he wore a glove or not. I mean, at the end of the day, I think this team is talented enough that if there was an asteroid field hitting the Earth, that they would still dominate them from bell to bell. But how does that kind of, have you seen Wentz throw in rain before?
The only time I saw him throw in rainy conditions was actually down in Mobile, down at the Senior Bowl, the first Wednesday down there. Well, the Wednesday practice, it was a little rainy, raw conditions, and he was fine. I mean, look, he's a big, huge guy.
Yeah.
Like, hand size is not an issue with Carson Wentz. And sort of one last set of numbers here to throw out about this 49ers defense. Football Outsiders, DVOA, team defense, team pass defense right now. They're the 29th worst defense in the league. So, I mean, you're talking about a defense that is bad by almost any sort of metric you could put out there. And so I would thunderstorms, no thunderstorms, hailstorms,
asteroid
frogs
fields.
Fall from the sky. Like, I think the Eagles are going to be able to have a big game. Carson Wentz should have a big game on Sunday.
Ben, what else do you have for our special, special guest?
Well, let me throw two thoughts out here on Carson's performance against San Fran. Number one, there's never been an Eagles quarterback in history who's had four consecutive games of three or more touchdown passes. Now, Carson's had 11 over the past three games, at least three in each. He had four last week, and now we're going up against San Fran. You just heard how bad that defense was. Peterson has shown, you know, no real concern for much of running the football down there in the red zone. He's very willing to throw it if they're at the 19 or if they're at the one. He doesn't really care, you know. And when you got a QB like Carson, you keep the ball in his hands, and if he needs to go run and get it, he'll go run and get it. You know what I mean? And so you've got a great opportunity there for Carson to set that record. And then also, very quietly, two Philadelphia Eagles are tied for the second most receiving touchdowns in the NFL. That's Zach Ertz and Nelson Aguilar as well. Both of them have five receiving touchdowns on the year. The maximum right now is six. Mac Hollins also, I'm relatively certain, is tied. No, wait, Juju Smith-Schuster is ahead, but Mac Hollins is up there as far as rookie receivers go with receptions and with touchdowns. And so you've got some touchdown record breaking opportunities this week against San Fran. Should be a lot of fun.
So you know what's going to happen. They're going to run the ball 400 times with LeGarrette Blount. I mean, that's what's going to happen. Now
Blount's going to have four touchdowns.
Yeah.
What is nice about that matchup is still that we are in a plus situation, at least according to PFF and according to, you know, the eye test, as far as being able to run the ball on the San Francisco 49ers, and they're in a negative matchup on the offensive side of the ball, both in pass blocking and in run blocking. Let's get to some quick predictions before we get out of here with our Carson Wentz on Erotic Life episode. Mark, score prediction, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Philly 35, San Francisco 10.
Ho!
I had 31-14 on the show that we did yesterday with Brian Peacock of Locked On 49ers. Make sure you check out yesterday's show. Ben, you sticking with your score? Do you remember your score? What do you got?
I only did the spread episode. Yeah, I didn't give a score. I've got San Fran covering. I trust that San Fran offense to put up a few more points against an Eagle defense that might be missing Jordan Hicks for the first week. We don't know if Ronald Darby is back, so I think they'll be able to score. But Philadelphia should run it up on them. I've got 34-24 Philadelphia.
Nice, nice. Mark, I was trying to get through that. So me and Mark are doing something together. We're watching video of the Super Bowl 39, the Eagles, Patriots, the last 5 minutes. I put it on, man. I sent Mark the screenshot. I'm like, I am sweating out of my eyes. Like, am I going through menopause? Because it's hot in here. I couldn't get through it yet, well, Mark. I'm going to try.
Here's the thing. I think sympathy pains, right? The idea that somebody that you know and love is going through something that was painful, and you start feeling that same sort of pain. Well, you were just seeing Donovan McNabb sort of dry heaving in the huddle during that final drive, that second to the last drive, actually, that quote-unquote hurry-up offense. And you were sort of having similar sort of sympathy pains, I think. I think that's what it was. But what Michael's helping me out with, and I'm actually kind of excited about this, I'll just plug it for a second. I'm doing a set of bye week episodes. Pats are coming up on the bye, so we're Locked On Patriots. I'm interviewing a bunch of different people to kind of talk about, you know, key moments from each of those five Super Bowl victories. Talk to Rich Hill over at SB Nation for Pat's pulpit. He runs that over at SB Nation. Talk to Matt Waldman today about Super Bowl 36. I'm going to be talking to Danny Kelly over at the Ringer above the Malcolm Butler interception, because he came from field goals, so he has some thoughts to share about that. Aaron Freeman over at the Falcoholic, also the host of Locked On Falcons. He and I are going to chat a little Julian Edelman fingertip catch off the turf last year. So I'm going to be like splicing it together, a little Malcolm Gladwell revisionist history style, some narrative stuff, doing
nice.
Something a little bit different. But yeah, it should be fun talking to different people. And of course, Michael J. Kist going to be talking about that Super Bowl with Eagles and the Patriots, and Bill Rossetti as well. We're going to talk a little Pats Panthers too. So it should be fun.
That's like a murderer's, like, this is like being set up for an execution, like with those guys. Like it's all like your revenge against them.
Yes. Yeah. Mark's just trying to show off to all the Eagle fans how many Super Bowls he has to talk about. That's all that was.
I mean,
was, hey, Philly fans, I get to talk about this game and this game.
And I want to talk
that
to this
funny.
Jerk.
I reached out to a couple of different people, and I say this with love, but the great Dan Happen, who was a member of a Giants organization, and he has a Super Bowl ring that came from beating the Patriots. When I reached out, I said, hey, Dan, you want to talk about any of these games? He's like, the only one I want to talk about is the one I have a ring from, and that's when we beat you guys. So if you want to talk about that game, I'm happy to come on. And then I hung up the phone. So,
real.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Mark, plug your stuff. plug yourself for our gentle listeners. Let them know where they can find you.
You can find me Friday nights on Battlefield 1. I'm That's usually right. running around the European sector with my friend Michael J. Kist. In terms of actually workload, look, it's probably easier. Just follow me on Twitter at Mark Schofield, because I'm literally losing track of the places I'm doing work for right now. I mean, there's every once in a while I get an email where it's like, hey, are you going to write something for us this week? It's like, oh, that's right. I work for you too. Ooh. So
you should just send them back. Do you owe me money? Did I get that last check? And just throw it back on them.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I should start doing that. But yeah, Inside the Pylon, where I work with my friend Michael here, NFL 1000 Project, I do all the quarterback write-ups with Doug Farrar. So, you know, when it comes to quarterbacks, look, I'm watching these guys every single play, every single snap, every single week, charting all of it. So, you know, when you tell me Lamar Jackson can't run an NFL offense, and I can tell you how many times a single NFL team ran slant flat last week.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
So, you know, it's not a Friday night concept anymore.
Right.
I mean, watch Josh McCown. Watch that Jets offense. Watch any sort of West Coast offense. They're running slant flat every single time. And, oh, by the way, Jay Cutler threw a horrific interception last week on slant flat.
Jay Cutler threw a horrific interception?
Yeah, I know. And it was on slant flat. So don't tell me that Lamar Jackson can't at least do that in the National Football League.
Yeah.
I'm getting angry. You're going to cut my mic. Cut it off.
In all seriousness, though, if you're somebody who, you know, you like to troll around Twitter, you like to follow these college quarterback prospects, I said it when I previewed him on the last episode, Mark is just right a shocking amount. Like, we talked about being right, being wrong, learning from our mistakes. Dude's just correct more than other people are. So if you want good information, just go follow Mark Schofield. It's the best move.
I do have to tease one L that I have coming my way, and that's Dak Prescott. I missed on Prescott. Every draft season, I do a 2-year look back at my projections and my evaluations. And, you know, I had Mariota 1 and Winston 2, so I was happy to write that one this past draft season. But coming up, I had Goff 1, Wentz 2. Dak Prescott was somewhere almost in the 20s for me. So I whiffed on Prescott, so I'm going to be taking a massive, massive amount. So I missed on him, but...
You know what? That's fine, because you hit on Wentz. And I remember when I first joined Twitter and I found Inside the Pylon, and I had you actually notifications on for Inside the Pylon. So every time y'all did like a tweet storm of articles, I would get like 15 notifications on my phone, and I would go through and like read each one throughout the day. I remember.
So you were the one, huh?
Yeah, I was the one.
Thanks for that, man.
The original. Yeah, no problem.
One and only.
I tweeted at you. I'm like, hey, man, what do you think about like projection? Like, is Goff the more pro-ready year one, but Wentz has the higher ceiling? And you're like, absolutely. That's what I'm thinking. So, look, give yourself some credit. At least you nailed those two. That's more than guys like Hot Cayenne Fahey are able to hit. So,
dude, all right. Learn how to say his name if you're going to make fun of him, man.
I'm not putting any respect
right here, man. I'm just going to plead the fifth. No comment.
All right. So, we will be back after the 49ers and Eagles play on Sunday with our sweet, sweet review. We want to thank Mark Schofield one more time for joining us. Mark, I will see you tonight on Battlefield 1. Ben, I hope you enjoy your weekend and keep your streak alive. Keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.